7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
And opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good evening. This is Vicki Casanova Willis. I am privileged to host Race Treaty for you this evening. As you know, we focus very directly on the human rights framework and just a range of issues that are confronting our people, specifically during this international decade for people of African descent. I'm going to continue to lift up issues and opportunities that we want everyone to be aware of. Now, we are cablecasting, we're actually broadcasting live this evening from the Indiana University African American Dance Company workshop. So you'll hear the noise in the background, and there's a lot of energy and passion around the culture, the dance, the education that is going on here today. Indiana University, you may or may not know, has the distinction of having the first and perhaps still the only academic and arts ensemble that is embedded into the curriculum and with the specific focus of preserving, teaching, performing, and presenting the arts of the diaspora. So in the tradition of, say, Fisk Jubilee Singers, they have the African American Choral Ensemble, and the spirit of some of the best R&B and jazz traditions and blues. You have the IU Soul Review. And for 42 years, the African American Dance Company as well. So I am going to encourage you to just listen tonight. And if you're so inclined, please do call in and ask a question of some of these participants. We have some renowned international artists from across the U.S., but also from Cuba, from Jamaica, from other parts of the world, Ghana, whose work has been focused on actually elevating the cultural heritage and the richness of African diaspora and arts. They're here for a full weekend of dance classes, live drumming, teaching about a number of the meanings behind many of the rhythms and helping refute for many this marginalization, really, which is inherent when people have dismissed for so many eons that people of African descent have any culture to speak of, as one example. So I'm actually walking up to one of the most important people in this group, whose phone I've actually taken for our broadcast. I'm going to hand this to her and ask her if she would just share a little bit with our audience about what she does with the African American Dance Company. Amelia Smith is a pretty amazing graduate student who's also studied and traveled in just different parts of the world. But it's so important to know that culture, there's a human right to culture and to education. So it's rooted in international law that people actually have a right to be able to study and learn and demonstrate part of what you're doing right here this weekend. So would you mind telling us just a little bit about what your role is with the African American Arts Institute and the African American Dance Company? Again, this is Amelia.
Sure. Thanks, Vicki. As you just said, I'm a graduate student here at Indiana University. And my role as the assistant instructor of the dance company entails, you know, I mean, what you would commonly consider to be, you know, the duties of an assistant, really anything that Professor Rosa needs, whether that's leading a rehearsal, you know, helping students one-on-one with choreography or anything else that they need help with. We really try to foster, a family environment. So, you know, I try to make myself available outside of dance also, you know, that if you need to talk, if you need help with whatever, you know, I'm a graduate student, so I can, you know, help you with this paper, whatever I can do to help the students. It's pretty major, but really, I mean, I think that my position really is more of a major opportunity than it is a job, because particularly in terms of what I'm responsible for is really just learning as much as I physically can from Professor Rosa. You know, her teaching style, the way that she motivates students, the way that even just the way that she runs a rehearsal. You know, I mean, she has over 40 years of experience in this, and she really has a unique gift in the way that she molds students through dance, and then the way that she affects their personal lives also. So on a basic level, you know, I'm really a rehearsal coach, and, you know, I get to dance with the company too, which is really awesome, having the chance. So I get the chance to learn all of these different dance techniques and histories, on top of them, you know, acting as an assistant, in terms of the, you know, administrative side and in terms of the actual dance education, and dance practice.
Thank you so much, Amelia. You can hear all the excitement in the background. So to be able to speak with one of the assistant instructors or have someone who's a graduate student and who has been pursuing work at the pre-doctoral level, learning about, and Amelia didn't tell you that she's not an African descendant. So this is not something that is exclusionary. It is a recognition of opening and broadening the awareness of people throughout the world who can benefit from understanding what the beauty is and what some of the, even, you know, looking at the actual cultural beliefs that undergird many of the dance or music expressions, really helps people begin to understand and tap into what we find in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights when you see that people do have a human right to culture and a human right to education. And what that means is that it's not only a specific prescribed educational curriculum that is perhaps one worldview, that of the dominant culture. We've increasingly found, and the Indiana University African American and African Diaspora Studies, African and African Diaspora Studies Department is the academic side of the group that's hosting this workshop this weekend. I want to see if I can find a couple of other of the presenters here. And one of the things I wanted to share is just what we were able to hear tonight. During the classes, there was a full day, the first of two full days of classes in the technique, as Amelia just mentioned. Even that refutes a myth that some people have had for years that, you know, the African dance, per se, there's no real technique involved, right? Which is absolutely not true. So when you note that Africa being a continent has countries, many nuances and different specific expressions rooted in those nuances, there are very specific techniques that come with teaching and learning of a specific style. So to have 2 days devoted on a large research university campus doesn't sound like a lot, but it is something more than many institutions or organizations are doing. And what it does is reach out to, you know, can be hundreds of people to literally help them have a different understanding of the people, the human beings behind this artistic expression. So that's how something seemingly as simple as a dance workshop or a drumming masterclass can literally be transformative from a human rights perspective. So one of the things that I'm going to encourage us to do is to continue to look at ways that we can utilize a race treaty and Black Talk Radio to talk to not just, you know, each other, those of us who have been very deeply involved in some of the human rights initiatives and education, but to really continue to try to reach out, as we are this evening, to groups that may or may not have ever thought about what they're doing as advancing human rights specifically. So I alluded to earlier the decade. We do know, and as other co-hosts, my fellow hosts for Race Treaty have noted many times, we are in the decade for people of African descent, 2015 to 2024. So one of the things that that means that is incumbent upon us is that the necessity exists for us to claim this decade, for us to host and present forums just such as this, which can help focus attention on what the meaning is, even why there was a designation of an international year. And then, and that came out of the Durban Declaration. So, and then why a decade? And I guess significantly, if it began in 2015, how many of our listeners, how many other people that you know, even know that we are 2 years in to what could be and should be, I would argue, one of the most significant opportunities to really examine and uplift the state of the African diaspora, the African descendants' roles and opportunities in helping move us forward as we all work to build, at least in the circles that I'm in, a people-centered human rights movement. We do know that that cannot happen without those who are most directly affected. That's how we're going to come out with strategies and tactics that are going to actually be transformative in a way that can then benefit many, many others. So I have happened upon a young woman here who I'm hoping will take a moment out and share with us a little bit of what happened in her workshop today. We have renowned percussionists and dancers and then other teachers and students from throughout the region. And in fact, as I said, across the from other parts of the world and across the nation. And Dr. Sheila Ward has come for many years to, as an alumna of Indiana University, as a distinguished alum of the African American Arts Institute. And she's come and presented Well, I'm going to let her tell us about that if she would. I'll get her to dial in a short while. But this is someone who is a scholar at the highest level, looking at continuing her work to become a certified instructor of both the Katherine Dunham technique and also Mfundele. So the learning, the education, never ever ceases. And this is from someone who already is just Dr. Sheila Ward. But not only is she teaching, she's also continuing to learn. So as part of the African American Dance Workshop, this 19th annual one, I'm going to get her to dial in and answer, if she would, just briefly. One of the things that is most significant for her as a part of the workshop, part of the panels, actually have the participants, the instructors, share a little bit of their backgrounds, how they became really immersed and passionate about culture, African diaspora culture and heritage, how they came to the point that they are as master instructors, really dedicating their lives to teaching and learning, something that, again, for so many generations, a lot of work has gone into the efforts to have us believe otherwise, that there's not anything of value within African descendant culture. And so there's just so many ways that this is being refuted. And Dr. Sheila Ward actually is so dedicated that she, as a tenured professor in Richmond, Virginia, actually commutes every weekend to the Philly area to work with young people there and developing a really esteemed professional dance company, again, to continue to share the work and to pay it forward. So that commitment, yes. Uh-huh.
Ms. Vicky Hobbs, this is patio engineer. Very interesting topic. I had a couple of questions for you.
Definitely.
You just talked about the dispute of whether an African descended culture exists. Because I have heard many people, and it's sad, but when I say many, I'm not exaggerating, but I've observed conversations with those who claim that there is no such thing. What would you say?
Right. Well, I would say a couple of things. I mean, just look around you. For those who say that African descendants have no culture, we can look to so many expressions where we know that we are thought leaders, but also the cultural bearers, from fashion to music to language, right? Whether you want to call it slang or street language or whatever. Just so many different areas where we've seen that the trendsetters are African descendants. So the culture is really the sum total of one's experiences. So it's, you know, it's beyond the arts, as you know, but it literally is, you know, from how folks wear their clothes to how they wear their hair to how they speak to how they walk. And in so many of those areas, we've seen imitation and monetization, right? Getting extremely rich off of a number of these different cultural expressions, but at the same time, the criminalization of so many of them. You know, think about the hairstyles, the sagging pants, the things that have been used against, you know, African descendants, while at the same time, that's one of the comments, and I'm glad you asked that, because that's actually one of the remarks and questions that came up this evening for our esteemed panelists, which was, you know, about appropriation or misappropriation of others' cultures.
My other question would be more to culture as a human. Mm-hmm. Now, we know here in the United States, in terms of education, the arts have really been defunded. The arts for a number of years have been under assault.
Right.
In the context of international law, when you say that appropriate education is human rights, international law aspect, do that, you apply. Let's say I go to a high school, or let's just say I have a high school student in my family.
Yes.
They have nothing in terms of African American studies or African studies. I would then take it from your title and the discussion and the dialogue I've been hearing is that I have a right to go to that institution and demand under international law, you know, a cultural
study.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we know happened back during the 60s in particular was, you know, students demanded all over campuses. It's called the Black Revolution on campus, if you would. Students that just demanded, hey, could I get you all to call in maybe? That would be great. I'm sorry, I have a couple of my esteemed folks that are standing here saying, absolutely, they will. So students demanded all across the United States, for example, that they have students who would, and teachers that look like them, that they would have topics and content that reflected their realities as opposed to a different worldview, right, the Eurocentric worldview. We saw where people through various means, again, I'm going to step out of this space because it's just a little bit noisy, but we saw where people of various means, found ways to transform what was available and versus what was denied on campuses. And in fact, that's a part of how this African American Arts Institute came into being here on the Indiana University campus. It has been, I'm going to move away because I don't know if you can hear me. It's just such excitement, and we have students of all ages. It's really intergenerational and very diverse. So what we see is that not only is it something that is a right for the people of the race or the nationality who are not being reflected, but it also is a right for others, right? When we affirm everyone's humanity, then we lift everyone up. So again, that's the point of it not being an exclusionary situation, but something which allows us to not have a one-sided view of the world that creates an invisibility, which necessarily... It also creates an invisibility, but also a vulnerability for those people who are basically then kind of taken as throwaways, if you will, not important enough. I'll give a quick example in Chicago, for example, where we've utilized the international human rights framework with regard to the police torture justice, a measure of justice in that part of the reparations holistic approach that a group called Black People Against Police Torture, and actually my husband from the office of Sandra G. Willis had really brainstormed, looked to the international model for what reparation included, and it's not just finances, but they also looked to ways that would help prevent something like this ever happening again, where a regime within the police department could literally torture through some of the most heinous forms possible over, 100, and some say as many as 200 Black youth, boys primarily, and teens. And so it was deemed that a part of the healing and the repair was that the story, which had previously, no one wanted to listen to, people wouldn't believe, the story has to be told, and it has to be codified in the curriculum so that we're not just teaching myths about, law enforcement, but we are teaching people about what really did happen to human beings with the goal of making sure that it can never happen again, and hopefully with the goal of sharing the significant role that Black people, quite frankly, who were from the targeted community, played in bringing about the measure of justice finally through international law. It is just exciting to see the lines of folks standing here surrounding the presenters and the teachers. And I'm going to step back and encourage that we let them call in and talk with us at another time. Because to see this is almost like this is the kind of thing that you see for, it's reserved for our sports stars, right, and our media celebrities and maybe musicians. You do not often see it for an African drummer, at least not here on a college campus, right, because they're not lifted up in that way. So I'm happy to be here live and being able to observe it, and yet I'm going to respect the excitement that I'm seeing with the folks that are the students, as young as middle school and elementary school, and all the way to grandparents, literally partaking of these classes and participating. So it's quite unique. The other thing is speaking of the right to education, I know that groups, including Dr. Vernelia Randall and some others who you're aware of, are working very diligently with regard to the historically Black colleges and universities, right? The HBCUs. So when you talk about the right to education, we also have to look at, the channels, the venues, and the institutions through which that education is delivered. And the fact that just phenomenal work has been done to be both the keepers of the culture and in some ways uniquely defining the culture and education of African descendants in this country. HBCUs can absolutely be looked upon as a model for the human right to self-determination in that sense. From an education standpoint, and the impact of HBCUs and the results, just really cannot be denied. They've delivered something for people and to people who were simply not being served. And then the content is not something that has been honored or respected or lifted up, certainly on any mainstream campuses. So it makes it a very interesting thing to begin to really apply the human rights framework, the international law, which race treaty has charged itself with doing, and helping, I would say, just kind of everyday people begin to examine what does that really mean? What does it really mean? The human right to culture. Mm-hmm.
My other question goes to what you said about education as a human right. I have observed that many of us here in the United States have bought into the government the government will only provide their education through K through 12. But we saw the last presidential election, particularly the Democratic primary, and representing the campaign of Senator Sanders was tuition free public colleges and universities. And I have to be honest with you, I was taken aback, and you were Black folks on Black radio saying things like, oh, people just want something for free how you want to pay for it and things of that nature. But when you look at education as a human right, to me, that would also include quote unquote higher education past.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, we see this in other countries, right? So we know that the free higher education is not something in many European countries that is looked upon as some sort of unearned handout, you know, to the point of what you're saying. It's looked upon as something that's absolutely feasible to do without having to create these schisms and class, you know, dynamics of the haves and the have-nots. It's, you know, and the human rights paradigm, quite honestly, says you're entitled to this because you're breathing, right? Just because you're a human being, not because you have enough money to access something that that privilege, right, offers and affords you that other people, you know, either haven't earned or don't deserve the right to. So it's that whole idea, as you just noted, that, you know, this is just something that is correct. But the other thing is that, you know, we can't look at these issues without looking at the sometimes unspoken reality that the reason we're having to fight for this is that it's against the backdrop of racism, right? Of true hatred of quote unquote others. And, you know, so that you have to examine, well, what is it that, who stands to benefit if you don't offer, you know, free higher education or whatever to everyone, to all human beings? Well, it's those with privilege who have gained their privilege by both marginalizing and oppressing and in many cases, you know, pimping in one way or another. Those people who they've been able to lift themselves above, you know, above because of those oppressions. So when we look at the fact that even education in the U.S. has taken on more of a tone of tooling, you know, versus schooling, I know many of the programs are very, even at the high school and middle school level, we would call them, you know, tracking, if you look very closely. They're narrowly defining the trajectory that someone would be on, in some cases even a discipline. If a freshman in high school knows that they're going to a medical academic prep before they even know whether they want to be a medical professional, but all that they're given access to in these crucial development phases for their brains and their imagination and their, you know, problem-solving skills, if all they're given is this narrow set of information that will equip them to be a cog in the, you know, the corporate and capitalist system that says, okay, they could be good enough to do, you know, a couple of medical reports, yeah, if you would, then that's another way of providing education, if you would, undercover, but it's a very, very, very limited one, right? So that's, you know, going back to the cultural side of it, so many people look at dance, for example, as just something really, they just, you know, it's very dismissive, right? And not looking at, you know, as you mentioned, the medical side of things, that, you know, the dance discipline also is extremely healthy for people, right? The endorphins and the things that benefit your brain and focus and all that. So it almost is as if what we're talking about with the human right to culture and education is also important from that standpoint, not just to be an equalizer to say that, yes, every human being is entitled to this, to be able to have an African-American dance company or African and diaspora studies that affirm, you know, multiple cultures around the world, but also just the fact of really realizing the broadening the sometimes really narrow definitions of what a specific educational discipline might mean, like dance. So we actually have Dr. Sheila Ward on the line with us. I think I was able to pull her away from many adoring fans briefly. And I just wanted to ask if she would share just a little bit about the, you know, the workshop, the conference, the work that she does, but also a little bit about some of the questions, perhaps. One of the questions maybe that struck her the most in this panel that we just heard. because there were some very poignant questions and also comments about how important it has been to be a part of this cultural arts and education community. So welcome, Dr. Sheila Ward. You tell us who you are and what you're doing here this weekend and why it's so important.
My name is Sheila Ward. I'm from Richmond, Virginia, but I attended Indiana University, where I was a member of the Afro-American Dance Company at that time, which is currently the African-American Dance Company. I was also a member of the IU Contemporary Dance Theater at Indiana University. So I think the question that dealt with appropriation was most important to me, and the person who actually responded to that question focused on the fact that it was important that history goes along with any aspect that is being appropriated. And I believe that that is totally true, that the history behind any type of movement, any type of dance, any song, any tradition, if the history is not there, then you're really missing the purpose. I also believe that appropriation is okay if it is relevant and if it, the person knows exactly why they are doing it, that it's not something they're doing for a fad, that it's not something that is unknowingly being misplaced, which means you have to study what it is you're doing so that it is appropriated appropriately.
Thank you so much. So when you talk, and I know we don't have a lot of time with you, there are a ton of people here, you've flown in for this annual workshop, and when you meet with students, either on your college campus or perhaps in the community group, I think you've been part of founding a dance company, in fact, on the East Coast. What are some of the things that you can speak to with regard to either the obstacles or even the benefits, I guess I would say, of devoting your life to African diaspora arts?
I'm a founding company member of Elion Dance Theater. It was founded in 1995 by Elion Evans III, and I am currently one of the co-directors of Elion Dance Theater. We do a lot of work in the community, and it is important for us to have a platform to share our history. And I find that dance, as well as other performing arts, are excellent platforms. We have the stage, we have the street, we have the building now and the TV. So we have so many avenues to tell our history and tell our culture through a medium that is attractive to a lot of people. And so we have to be responsible when we do that. We need to make sure that we are bringing our young folks into the fold. And we also need to make sure that our older folks are also brought into the fold. We need to make sure that we keep it intergenerational, because if we look traditionally within the African culture, the arts were interdisciplinary. Dance, the premium was always on the older dancers, because they were the seasoned dancers. And so they were the ones that people were waiting in line to dance with. And so we need to bring a little bit of that culture, where everyone mutually respects one another and continue to perform the art, including dance, throughout the lifespan. And in order for that to happen, we have to know our history, and we have to be willing to bring our young people along and to make sure that our older people continue to be engaged.
That is so crucial. Thank you so much. Real words of wisdom, but also a good reminder for us as we work to have other people recognize and affirm that there is a human right to culture and to education. Mm-hmm. We have a job that we can do right here ourselves in educating our own, learning what is culturally relevant from an African heritage perspective, as you just shared, honoring the elders as well. And I thank you for doing the work, Dr. Sheila Ward. How do people get in touch with you or find out more about Elyon Dance Company or any of the work that you're doing? I know you're working to continue to expand on the work that another amazing cultural bearer, Catherine Dunham, Ms. Dunham, did.
Well, the Catherine Dunham Teaching Certification Workshop is actually going to be in Chicago this year. Mm. And so if you Google Catherine Dunham Teaching Certification Workshop, the information for that will come up. And
awesome.
I can be reached at Sheila at Elyon Dance, that's E-L-E-O-N-E Dance, D-A-N-C-E .org. And you can also visit the website for Elyon Dance Theater at www.elyondancealltogether.org.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time. If you happen to see Professor Rosa, she should be Dr. Rosa. She's earned a doctorate over and over in the last 42 plus years. If you happen to see her and if she's not swamped and you can ask her if she could give 5 minutes, that would be awesome.
Thank you
so much. So, Scotty, you know, one of the things that I'm hoping that I can continue to do, and I appreciate so much being able to have the opportunity, from Onaje and Robin and others to be one of the hosts with Race Treaty. We just want to continue to share some of these people,
uh-huh.
some of these treasures, and some of these resources. So I hear Professor Rosa. Is that Professor Iris Rosa on the phone?
That is me.
Hi.
On the phone.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, first of all, for being who you are and also for this really wonderful, impactful, thank you, very impactful dance and drumming workshop this weekend. I feel like it's a conference. It's definitely one of the most incredible experiences that many people who are coming to learn more about African diaspora cultural arts can have, and certainly on a mainstream, quote-unquote, college campus. So thank you for taking a couple of minutes. Would you just tell us a little bit about what is so important about this? We are talking about culture and education as a human right. It is under international law.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing this through your work every day. So could you just talk very briefly, and then we'll let you get back to your all these participants here. About what it is that you do here at Indiana University with regard to the Department of the African and African Diaspora Studies, but also this dance company that you founded and have directed for over four decades, and now what has brought all these people here today, this weekend.
Okay, well,
that's a big question. I know.
Let me begin with the just the idea of a dance workshop. This is my 19th dance workshop, and as director of the African American Dance Company and professor of what we call now African American and African Diaspora Studies. I just thought that it was really important for students to be exposed and gain knowledge about the dance traditions of the African diaspora
mm-hmm.
and bring it to a place where it was accessible. So if we couldn't take the students out to other countries, other conferences, other states, what was it that I could do to bring those traditions and the knowledge of those traditions and the importance of those traditions to a central place where it was accessible? And so I started this in 1998, and it grew from there. Actually, I was one of the first ones that taught at the first workshop, but I thought that it was important for students to get exposed in African traditions, contemporary modern traditions that incorporate a black aesthetic, and
yes.
also
the aesthetics that are outside the continental U.S., and that includes anything in the Caribbean, South America, because as we know, there is that triangle, the trifecta, right? Africa and, you know, the New World being Caribbean and South America and America. And so that students could understand the connection historically, culturally, socially, through the dance discipline. And so now it has grown to a point where we feel it's very important to bring students from as many places that we can to be exposed to these traditions and use the dance discipline so they can also be encouraged to go to college. That you can dance and be in college and have any type of major because our department provides that. And
that's amazing. So I was going to say it's really amazing. Yes. Well, you had we were able to witness a really special honor that you received. And I will tell you, watching and listening to a panel of speaking various languages and hailing as fellow African descendants and master artists in drumming and dance, but still hailing from all around the world, is just a real testament to how rich the culture of African peoples is, but also how diverse and inclusive, right? It's not something that's intended to block other people or disrespect a Eurocentric, you know, worldview. It's just being more accurate and more broad. But I was so excited to see an honor that you just received. And can you just tell us a little bit about it? It goes to the question or comment you just mentioned about starting some of your work to compensate for the fact that you couldn't always take students out around the world. And it turns out that you are actually also able to take your students out all around the world, which is wonderful.
I take them all around the world, and they don't have to really go anywhere, right? Because I bring the world with them. And
wait, China. Mm-hmm. I've seen Jamaica. You've been in. I heard Cuba coming up, perhaps. I mean, so many people are recognizing your work and the importance of just teaching and learning more broadly than what a lot of people want to teach and learn.
I was really honored tonight to be presented with a letter of invitation of the Fiesta de Fuego in Santiago de Cuba. And I've been to Cuba, I've been to Havana, Matanzas, and Santiago, but to come full circle and actually be invited to be a participant in the event was very, very moving. And I had known about the letter of invitation, and I told the dance company, but, you know, their students are like, yeah, so you got a letter. I think today it really made an impression on them that this is real, the way it was presented and the reasons why she presented it. And also, like I said, it comes full circle because for me, you know, Cuba has been an area of research, and I haven't been able to go back in a while because I've been doing other places. I've been going to other places.
Right.
And coming back, like I said, full circle, and being able to this time have an invitation and being able to participate and exhibit work that I've done is very exciting.
Yes. Well deserved. Thank you so much for all that you have done and continue to do with regard to education. You know, the human right to education is only as good as having people who will invest their lives and their brilliance to providing that education. And you've done it. You are doing it so well. And then also as a culture bearer. So just thank you so much. This is only the first day of this 19th annual workshop. So I can't wait to see all the folks learning it again throughout the day tomorrow. And thank you so much for joining us on Black Talk Radio Network. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for inviting me, and you know, hopefully that we can keep, you know, we can keep this going and get our young people involved.
Absolutely, we will follow your example. You've given a brilliant one, and we thank you so much again. Take good care.
Okay,
I'll let
you
get back to all of your participants. All right.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. We were just speaking with Professor Iris Rosa, who is the founding director of the Indiana University African American Dance Company. It is one of three ensembles of the African American Arts Institute, and it's actually one of the first and one of the only, perhaps still the only, academic and arts ensemble which is dedicated to researching, preserving, and presenting the traditions of dance and music from the African diaspora. It is a really amazing accomplishment when we look at how, despite the fact that we are here on Rice Treaty tonight, speaking about, you know, look at your Universal Declaration of Human Right. It says right there, there is a right, a human right to culture and a human right to education. But, you know, I speak from this workshop where, and I am an IU alum. I actually am an alumna of the dance company many years ago. But this was the first dance class where I ever took class to live African drumming accompaniment. This is something that seems so simple. It's so integral to studying African dance and Cuban dance. And when I even say African dance, there are so many different types, right? But it's something that we have to be mindful in the United States. Playing the African drum or the drum could literally get someone's fingers or hand, you know, chopped off. So to be able to come full circle and recognize this right to culture has been so strong, despite being denied even under threat of mutilation and death. The right to education, again, for African descendants, just looking here in the U.S., it was against the law to read, for someone else to teach you to read. They could be put to death. So we are taking this very seriously. It's something that is not going to happen by accident, to really ensure that these become more than just words, you know, these promises within the Universal Declaration and also within the Durban Declaration, these other instruments, the ICERT, which is one, which we know is very much a focus of Rice Treaty here, is these are the tools. And they can be utilized for the very important human rights movement building work that we must do to benefit all humankind. It's just a real privilege to be able to speak with professors and fellow artists and people here today at Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana, as part of this African and the African Diaspora Studies Department at African American Arts Institute work. This is something that would not be occurring had not people had the vision and the tenacity to say, yes, this is important, and yes, we will invest our lives to ensuring that, you know, some advancements are made. So in this international decade for people of African descent, I just want to encourage us all to really be as focused, be as mindful about what we can do at any level to make sure that we are lifting up those ideas and those ideals, which are so critical and yet so very, very basic. The human right to culture, of course. The human right to education, certainly. This is Vicky Casanova Willis. I am one of the hosts for Rice Treaty. I'm very, very honored to be able to join an esteemed group of folks who are going to be bringing to you various topics and experts to be able to share. We really thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tune in, to follow up, to call in. There are different formats on a weekly basis, and we really are here to just ensure that we are doing our part every day to continue to inform and to educate and to move forward, carrying the human rights banner, but also making it real.
Well, Vicky, this is Scotty. I want to thank you again for putting together this program. I had never considered education or culture as a human right. So I really appreciate you bringing this information to our listeners. Did you
thank you so much.
Wanted to close us out with as we broadcast?
You know, I want to encourage you to think about and note not just the decade, but some of the very specific individual observance dates. Part of what helps move us forward sometimes is being able to look back, right, in the Sankofa spirit. And coming up this month, March 25th, is actually the International Day of Remembrance of Slavery, Victims of Slavery, and of the transatlantic slave trade, which, you know, we know as the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of African enslavement. That means attack on the culture, on education, on, you know, the very people, the history, the heritage, all of that. So as we remember, we want to ask, encourage people to participate in something at some level, whether it's, you know, social media and just hashtag and encouraging people to know about it and to remember those who have gone before and who, in fact, have lost their lives, either in, as while enslaved or, you know, killed as a result of it. So this is absolutely incorporated in what we're talking about tonight, with the human right to culture and education. And we want to remember, we will never forget. I want to thank you so much, everyone, and continue to push forward with human rights for all. Thank you. Thanks, Scotty.